This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of The Progressive Magazine, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. Today, my guest is Juan Melendez, an innocent man who spent 17 years on death row. He's the founder of Voices United for Justice. Juan Melendez, welcome to Progressive Radio.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Can you remember back to the time when you were arrested and what your...
It's a day I will never forget. It was on a Monday, May the 2nd, 1984. What I was sitting down eating lunch. I was working in a migrant worker, a farm worker. So I was pruning apple trees and peaches trees. And around lunchtime, while I was sitting down on the apple tree eating lunch with my friends, here come a whole bunch of FBI agents. And point gun at us and told it to hit the ground. They called my name, but I was scared to get up because the gun was pointing at me, but I raised my arm. So they told me to get up and walk toward them. They told me to open my mouth. They wanted to see if I had a missing tooth. I showed it to them. Then they told me to lift the sleeves of my left arm. They wanted to see if I had a sleeves of my shirt. They wanted to see if I had a tattoo, and I showed it to them. Then they told me, yes, you are the man we're looking for. You are wanted for unlawful flight to avoid prosecution with warrants for your arrest for first-degree murder and armed robbery in the state of Florida.
Wow. How'd you react to that? What was the first thing that went through your mind?
First thing, I was shocked. Of course, I was shocked, nervous. But I really don't understand nothing because I did not know the language that well at that time. If I say five words in English, three of them would have been cuss words. It's a type of English I knew at that time.
And they weren't speaking Spanish, too?
They weren't speaking Spanish. So they took me to slap handcuffs on me, read me some rights, and they took me to a federal prison. 2 weeks after that, they took me to in front of a federal judge, and he was talking about extradition. I did not understand what extradition means, or naive to the law. So at that time, the deep road interpreted to me to explain to me what extradition means. And all he told me in Spanish was, you either waive it or fight it. They're going to take me back anyway.
And so where are you from? Where are you from? Where are they going to extradite you to?
To Florida, where the case okay. where they wanted me for. So I waived extradition. They extradited me from the state of Pennsylvania all the way back to the state of Florida.
Did you have an attorney at any point here?
No, they gave me an attorney about 2 weeks after my arrival. First, they took me to court, and the judge read the charges to me. He told me that I was indicted, arrested for first-degree murder and armed robbery, and the state of Florida sinking the death penalty against me, the electric chair. A week or so after that, that's when the court appointed a lawyer to me. And I didn't hardly understand what he was saying because I did not know the language. They never gave me interpreter in trial.
At the trial, even, you didn't get an interpreter.
No, they never gave me an interpreter.
It sounds like your Fifth Amendment rights and Sixth Amendment rights to counsel were not honored.
Exactly. Then we started picking up the jury on a Monday. Tuesday, we're still picking up jury. Tuesday, even after they read the instruction to the jury how to conduct themselves in a capital murder case where they're sinking the death penalty, the evidence came in on a Wednesday. The jury was composed of 11 whites and one African American, no Hispanic, and I'm Hispanic. Wednesday, the evidence came in. This is what they had against me. They had what they call a police informer, what they call in the streets a snitch. He claimed that I confessed the crime to him. He also implicates another person in the crime, an African American person, a friend of mine. He gets arrested. He gets interrogated. He makes 15 statements. He incriminates himself in the crime. He gets charged with it. First degree murder, armed robbery, and they threaten him with the electric chair. So they offered him a deal to testify against me. He gets his first degree murder charge dropped. He gets his armed robbery charge dropped to assess it after the fact. Basically, what he said was, I picked him up, took him to the scene of the crime, dropped him off. Came back an hour and a half later, took him home, don't know what happened to after that happened. That's the entire evidence in the whole case. No physical evidence against me.
Still not a very good friend.
That's right. Two questionable witnesses. That's all, with a criminal record from Wisconsin to California, that make deals with the state and get leniency for their own crimes they commit. And this is not a unique case. It happens all the time.
How long did the trial take?
Well, Thursday they found me guilty. Friday they sent me to death.
Wow.
All the same week.
And what was your lawyer like?
My lawyer was, I did not understand nothing what he was saying. So I don't think he was very competent to defend me. That's one of the problems with this with the penalty cases. You don't get lawyers with good experience. You don't have the lawyers also don't have resources to fight the penalty cases.
What was your reaction when you heard the verdict?
My reaction was very disappointed, state of shock. But overall, I thought we Puerto Rican men was real macho men. So I was scared, very scared to die for a crime I did not commit.
Well, then what was prison like?
It was all you have in there is when they took me to death row. Like I say, I did not know how to read. I did not know how to write. I did not know how to speak English. The first year was very terrible. After 10 years, I got real tired of it. I wanted to commit suicide. I was lucky enough that one of the things that helped me survive was that the condemned men, the one that the prosecutor called Monster, taught me how to read, taught me how to write, and taught me how to speak English. That helped me a lot.
This is another inmate on death row.
Another inmate. Most all of them taught me, all the ones that knew. So anyway, after 10 years, I was real tired of it. And suicide thoughts came to my mind. And a lot of my friends committed suicide. They take what they call a garbage can, plastic garbage can bag, and they twist it all up, and they make a rope, and they put a noose. And they put the noose in their neck, and they throw themselves down, and they be hanged.
Well, how'd you overcome those feelings then?
Believe it or not, it was dreams. Every time suicide thoughts came to my mind, every time I got depressed, and every time I wanted out of there, I lay down, and God sent me a beautiful dream of my childhood. I grew up in the island of Puerto Rico. I get up in the morning, I see on the east side of my house is a wonderful mountain. I walk 6 minutes to the south. I'm in probably the beautiful beach in the world, at least to me. So then dreams, the swimming in the Caribbean Sea. So I took all the dreams as a sign and hope that one day I'll be out of there, I'll be free. And that's what saved me a lot. Plus the support of the family. Of course, the fact of being innocent also helped. Because you always have that faith that one day the truth will come out, and you can be released.
You're listening to Progressive Radio. My name is Matt Rothschild. I'm the editor of the Progressive Magazine. I'm delighted to have as my guest today Juan Melendez, an innocent man who spent 17 years on death row. He's the founder of Voices United for Justice. He is speaking around the country, in fact, around the world, against the death penalty. What kind of appeals process did you have then, or did you not have an appeals process going?
I'm considering myself a very lucky man, probably the most lucky man in the world. My case was upheld in the Florida Supreme Court three appeals. In the fourth appeal, that's what I got lucky. My first miracle, because I call all these miracles, was when I was able to move my case out of that racist county where I was convicted at. Out of the county where they fabricated the case against me, out of the county where the Good Old Boy Network operates. This happened in 1984 in Bartow, Paul County, Florida. By the way, don't go over there. It happened in an era where the KKs was burning black crosses in the black neighborhood. When the KKK was having parades in there, it was very popular. So this is the type of area where I was convicted at, forcibly convicted. Believe it or not, the races still play a part in the death penalty. So I was able to move my case out of that county because my trial defense lawyer became a judge and created what they call in the legal world a conflict of interest, and that conflict of interest gave me the opportunity to move my case out of that racist county to another county, and it fell in the hands of a courageous woman, a judge that go by the name female judge that by, go by the name Honorable Barbara Fletcher. I can sincerely say that she saved my life. So that was the first miracle in my case. The second miracle was when they found a tape recorder of the confession of the real killer.
Where'd they find that?
My trial defense had it one month before trial.
Before your original trial?
Yeah.
You're kidding.
One month before trial, he had the tape confession of the real killer. He took that tape and gave a copy of the confession to the prosecutor, but the jury never got in the hands of the judge, never got in the hands of the jury.
So the prosecutor just sat on it.
Sat on it. And plus the prosecutor sat on 16 documents that he never turned in to trial defense lawyer at the time of the trial. 16 documents that also corroborated the tape confession of the real killer.
And so how did the tape come get rediscovered?
My investigator came to see my trial defense lawyer, who just became a judge. And he tells her, I'm a judge now. I have a new office, but in the old office where I used to do defense work, it's a box in there with the name Melendez in it. That's when she went and took the box to her office, looked inside the box, and she found the tape confession of the real killer.
Unbelievable. And the state of Florida had the option after the judge threw out the death penalty to try you again. But they decided not to, right?
They decided not to. The Honorable Barbara Fletcher wrote a 72-page opinion when she listened to the tape confession of the real killer, when she supervised all the 16 documents that the prosecutor would hold, indicating the exculpatory evidence indicating that I did not commit the crime, these documents. And plus, at that time, I already had about 16 witnesses during three eventual hearings that I had that also corroborated the tape confession of the real killer. The wife of the real killer testified. The sister of the real killer testified. Law enforcement officers, former prosecutor, investigator, FBI agent, criminal lawyers, and friends of the real killer. And then they even found physical evidence against the real killer. So she wrote this 72-page opinion based on all this new discovered evidence, whatever they want to call it. And she chastised the prosecutor for the way he handled the case. She chastised law investigator for the way they investigated the case. And she chastised the man that is my trial defense lawyer for the way he called himself defending me. Ordered a new trial and let her know that the case was terrible damage, that everything indicates that you have an innocent man in death row. Prosecutor decided not to process the case, dismiss the case. And that's why I'm here. Thank you. Thank God talking to you.
Well, it's a pleasure having you here in the studio with me, Juan Melendez. Did a prosecutor ever apologize to you for this miscarriage of justice?
Never hear them. So far, never hear a prosecutor that do apologize when they commit this errors, or you want to call it errors. He's still a prosecutor in Polk County. He's been a prosecutor in Polk County for over 30 years. Only thing they did to him, they no longer give him homicide cases. Thank God for that. Mm.
How can you not be bitter right now?
I learned that from the inside. I learned that having hate and being bitter would not help you. I learned to, and it was not easy. You cannot teach nobody to forgive. This is something that you got to choose to do. So I learned to choose to forgive these people. But don't get me wrong, I am bitter. But the type of bitter that I have, I'm bitter to our the system, not to any particular person.
Well, let's talk about that system a little bit. What about the system enables so many people? Now there have been more than 117 people on death row who are there who are innocent. What is it about the system that gets innocent people on death row?
To be precise, it's been 123. I'm the number 99 in the nation. I'm the number 24 in the state of Florida. Florida lead the nation in incineries with 26. It's all because it's very political. You get death penalty cases, and you prosecutors start calling themselves being tough and crying. So every time they get a death sentence on somebody, it's nasty. They put it in the bail, increase the political carousel. So that's one of the reasons. One of the reasons they make so many mistakes is because police officers and prosecutors rely too much on informants, and informants will lie because they do deals. They had crimes, and they want to get the sentence reduced or whatever, and they make this type of deals. Also, you always will have in the system, you always will have a corrupt police officers that would tank with evidence. You will have people that will take the stand and with eyewitness identification and they be wrong. If one of the problems we have and with the death penalty, with this eyewitness identification, they destroy the 10 out of 9, they are wrong. And juries rely too much in this type of testimonies. Also, you will have a problem with attorneys. Then some of them are good attorneys, but they don't have the resources. They're not given the resources to fight to defend a client properly. Don't have the resources to do pre-trial investigations, to give mitigations, and they don't have the resources to pay expert witnesses, etc., etc. It's a whole bunch of stuff can go wrong in this.
Mm-hmm. I'm speaking with Juan Melendez, who spent 17 years on death row as an innocent man. Jury selection is also a problem.
Very big problem. Jury selection, what they do is, to order for a jury to sit on a death penalty case, he got to be able to impose the death penalty. He got to be able to say, yes, I'm willing to, I can vote for a death sentence. So you got the African American persons and the Latins. The majority don't believe in the penalty. So they will be excluded from the jury. So what you got left? You got left a group of people that will impose the penalty, will vote for the penalty, unless with cases with less evidence, with weak evidence.
So they're more likely to convict someone who believes in the death penalty than someone who may not.
Plus, you got the death penalty cases. The crimes are very, very portrayed very vicious. So the first thing the prosecutor do is he takes a pictures of the crime scene, and he shows to the jury, and inflames the jury. You're not in the picture killing nobody. All you see is a death course in there with a throat slash, a shot 3 times, et cetera, and a pool of blood. So emotions now get involved.
And yet capital crimes, murders are horrific events, and family members have absolute right to be vengeful and angry. Mm-hmm. That's a human emotion.
Mm-hmm.
If the criminal justice system worked perfectly, if you could erase these errors that you talked about, and you knew for an absolute certainty that the person who was being charged with a capital crime was guilty of the crime, and that the procedures were fair, and the jury was selected fairly, and he had a good attorney, and the judge was good with his instructions, would you still be against the death penalty?
First of all, I will tell you right from the start, it cannot be fixed. All what you describe in there, it would never happen. It's always going to be over serious prosecutor. It's always going to be a corrupted officer. It's always going to people will take the stand and lie. The only way you can fix this death penalty is like this: eliminate it, get rid of it. You can sentence a person to life in prison, an innocent person to life in prison, which is bad. 12 years later, you find out that he's innocent. You can give him his life back. You cannot do this with the death penalty. We're not perfect to kill. Once you lock a person up and you put him in a cell, throw away the keys, you don't got to worry about it no more. And prison is not a picnic.
Do you know how many people who have been killed on death row who are innocent?
I got, it's a good question, I got 4 friends that I know.
Really? Your 4 friends
four,
that you
four
know?
4 friends that I know that I studied the case. We was next door to door for years and years. We work on the cases together. I'm quite sure they're innocent. The names are Leo Jones, Benny Demps, Jesse Tefaro, and Pedro Medina.
And they're still on death row, or were they executed?
They already executed.
And they were executed in Florida?
In Florida.
Oh.
That's one of the hardest things for me was, just imagine yourself, you next to a person condemned to death for 9 and 10 years. He becomes more than a brother to you. Hell, I got brothers and sisters, and they never wrote me a letter.
So the support is very good.
Yeah, very. You deepest thoughts, you tell him deepest thoughts, he tells you his, and you cry his shoulder, he cries in yours. And then one day, they snatch him out of there, take him to the warrant office, and he's going to be notified that the government has signed his death warrant. Now he knows exactly the time he's going to be executed. At the same time, I'm in the cell praying to God that the state spare his life, that he can get out of that, get out of that watch. And then it never happens. Then I know exactly the time they're killing him, because my days was the electric chair. So the lights go off and on, and I can hear this bossy sound. Ooh, they're still in my mind. And I know the exact time when they snatch his life away. And that's a hell of a feeling. It's a feeling that stayed with me. And now when I went in there, they only had killed 9 people. When I get there, they killed the 10 person. When I leave that place, 51. Today in the state of Florida, 60. So, you know, I've been through all this pain all the time, all the time.
Did you get to say goodbye to your friends before they were taken away?
No, yes, we get to say goodbye. They don't execute him right at that time, because it's a period of between 30 to 60 days, no more than 90. And like I said, at that time, I'm just walking down in the cell, just praying, but it never happened.
I'm speaking with Juan Melendez, an innocent man who spent 17 years on death row. He's the founder of Voices United for Justice. You've also worked with other prisoners who've been exonerated from death row.
I'm a member of the board of the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty. I'm also a member of the board of Journey and Hope from Violence to Healing. I'm a spokesman for the Canadians against the death penalty. I've been on to a lot of few organizations.
Talk to me a little bit, Juan Melendez, about this organization, Journey of Hope from Violence to Healing. There are victims' families in there as well.
Yeah, victim families for of murder. They have families of incineries. They have death row families, people that have already been convicted to death, and they get support for Journey of Hope. It's a very great organization. It's founded and directed by a person called Bill Perkey.
And how do you talk to a family member who's lost a loved one to a murder?
It's very difficult. I did it plenty of times. Prosecutors always tell them to sink for the death penalty. So they get me to talk to them to change their mind not to sink the death penalty.
Have you succeeded sometimes?
Yeah, I succeeded. Lots of time. I tell them the pain inside the death penalty. I would tell them that you don't want the mother, another mother, go to the same suffering, losing a loved one. It's already too much damage. I say it would never be no closer, because it would never be no closer. It always will be an empty share on Christmas Day, on Thanksgiving Day. It's a pain that you have to learn how to live with it. Killing somebody is not going to get you no closer.
And gradually a couple of those family members will come around?
Yeah, come around.
Oh, that must give you some sense of success.
Yes, one of my good successes when I can convince a politician. I had did that too.
How'd you do that?
It is telling about the pain. The problem with the death penalty is this: people don't have all the facts, so it's all about educating them. Once you educate them, they see they understand the facts and the consequences of having a death penalty in the state. They will know that it's a bad government policy. Don't resolve nothing. It all creates more collateral damage, more pain, more suffering.
Which politician were you able to talk to?
Langton in New York. Mm-hmm. And every time he do a speech, he mentioned me. When the death penalty come out, he say, "One of the person that helped me change my mind and go against the death penalty is Juan Melendez."
You know, there are a lot of referendums around the country, some this mm-hmm. November, on mm-hmm. The question of a death penalty in each particular state. What arguments do you use with people who may be for the death penalty that you think are most persuasive?
If like example, like a state of Wisconsin who got a referendum, I would tell them to educate themselves in the death penalty. Lots of people think that it's more cheaper to execute a person than to keep them alive in prison. Wrong. It costs $2.3 million just to execute a person. It costs the state of Florida $10 million to execute Ted Bundy. The state of California can save over $200 million annually if they get rid of the death penalty.
It's a bad argument anyway for proponents of the death penalty. You know, they're valuing, even if they were right that it was cheaper, you're putting up human life against a dollar sign there.
Uh-huh. So now you take another thing, the races. It's not fair. And the racist part go more in the victims of homicide. If a black man kills a white man, the chances to get the death penalty go sky high. But if a white man kill a black man, the chances to get the death penalty is very, very slim. So that's another part. And you take the most important part is they can kill an innocent person. I'm a prime example of that. And they already had killed innocent person. DNA already showed that. How about the people before DNA? Mm-hmm. They could not prove it because DNA never existed. How about them?
I'm speaking with Juan Melendez, an innocent man who spent 17 years on death row. You mentioned DNA. You told me earlier you worked with Barry Scheck, who does a lot of work on DNA. Barry Scheck became famous during the O.J. Simpson trial. Do you believe that the existence of DNA will lead to the abolition of the death penalty, or may it have a perverse effect and get the DNA on someone who
first
is accused?
First of all, DNA would not resolve the problem. Like I said before, DNA did have proved that they already had killed innocent people. Only out of the 123 exonerees, only 14 got out on DNA.
No, only 14 of the exonerees were freed that way.
That way.
And you weren't freed that way.
No, I wasn't freed that way.
So that's not the be-all and end-all.
There you go.
It's going to take a lot of educational work. The two organizations that you mentioned, National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty, people can go to its website at ncadp.org. Mm-hmm. And then Journey of Hope, From Violence to Healing, an organization that we were just talking about, journeyofhope.org. Now, your organization, Voices United for Justice, that's Voices United with then the number 4,
exactly.
justice.org, right?
Exactly.
Any last words you have for us on
this? I encourage the Latin community and the African American community to join forces in this war. It's a war that we're going to win, but without them, we would never win it. So I encourage them to get educated, to get all the facts about the death penalty, and I encourage the state of Wisconsin to go against the death penalty. Going in favor of the death penalty is a step back.
Well, that'll have to be the last word. Juan Melendez, thanks so much for being my guest today on Progressive Radio.
Thank you for having me here.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.